Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. It's June 3rd. This is Brad. I have Sam and Kevin in the studio with me this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brad.
So Kevin's celebrating the five-year anniversary of Kevin Finn Incorporated or some such thing.
Something like that, yeah.
How does it feel?
It feels great. I didn't even know it was 5 years, and now I'm just I'm ecstatic.
Now you have a reason to celebrate.
Exactly.
You can take your girlfriend out and have a nice expensive dinner and pop some champagne.
Sounds good to me. It's on you, right? So,
yeah, talk to Lee about that. So what's going on with you? You're just playing with your technology over there.
I'm preparing for the show. I'm doing my research.
Glad somebody's doing your research. Okay, I'm not going to ask what that means. So, well, this morning we have Robin Bartlett with us. Robin is with Life Transition Experts, and good morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Thanks for taking the time. We just want to start by getting to know you a little bit. So if you can tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, where you grew up, where you went to school, how you got to be doing what you're doing.
Well, I am a native Atlantan, and I don't mean Lawrenceville. I was born in Fulton County, attended Fulton High School, and grew up in Lakewood Heights, which is the Mayberry of Atlanta. And been in Atlanta my whole life. I'm actually living in Midtown now.
That makes you unique and special.
I think so.
I guess things have changed a little bit. In the last few years.
Oh, my gosh. The changes are wonderful, though. Even driving through Atlanta, downtown Atlanta, the names of the streets have changed. Some of your listeners may remember Hunter Street, which is now Martin Luther King Boulevard. And just so many streets have changed to one-way streets. You've got to know your way around.
Well, this was probably a pasture where we're sitting right now when you were growing up.
Oh gosh, I don't know that I could have even driven here. Yeah. It would have been through Roswell Road. 400's not here.
Right, of course.
Wonderful. So,
give us a little bit of background of, tell the story from where you began to where you are right now. It's an interesting story.
Okay. Back in the early 90s, I guess, I started as a marketing director with an assisted living community. Back then it was called Personal Care Homes. And part of my job was to meet with the prospective residents. And I really enjoyed that. I connected and would tell them, all right, I'm going to see you just next week or whenever it is they were going to move in. And they're smiling, hugs, hugs, kiss, kiss. It was going to be great. Well, the most bizarre thing happened, and it happened over and over again, probably 80% of the move-ins. The sweet little lady who was happy to see me all of a sudden just freaked out. They were just terrified. They were scared. And there was a lot of bizarre behaviors like beating on the wall and crying out. And you know, I'm there. The resident's family is there. But still, it was not a good situation. The worst case scenario was a lady who tried to jump out the car on the way to our community. And then several ladies just simply refused to get out of the car.
And I hear what you're saying, we've talked, so I know that this is a real issue. But in my mind, that is probably, or I would think, somewhat normal. It's a big change, it's an unknown. And I don't care how well you prepare for it or how logically you have walked through the process and rationalizing that this is the right thing. Mm-hmm. It is a change. Exercise is the right thing. It's a change. I don't like it. So,
exactly. It's a very major life transition. So I was very distraught about it. I was distraught for the resident because I could see the stress on them, the family members. And the existing residents on move-in day for a new resident, they hid. They stayed in their rooms. They would peek outside the doors, and I even talked with them because I knew everyone so intimately. And they said, I'll meet her in a couple of days when things calm down.
So I didn't gather that. So what you're saying, even the established residents, when a new person came in, that was change for them too.
They avoided that person.
Amazing.
And so, and of course, my staff disappeared. It's like, and I'm the only one left to stay, you know, and it was a whole day ordeal. And it just really broke my heart. So I decided to go back to school. At the time, I had my bachelor's. And so I went back to Georgia State for my master's. And I took every opportunity to research what is going on in this situation. And long story short, I found out. And I wrote my master's thesis on it. It's the psychological and sociological variables that underlie the relocation of the elderly into an assisted living community. That's thesis, one-page titles. And I tell you, I was just excited because I couldn't wait to implement it. And then I had the unique opportunity of opening another assisted living community, brand new. And the owners allowed me the opportunity to implement the program I had theoretically written. And I want you to know, I stopped this bizarre behavior 100%.
Okay. All right. Well, we're gonna allow you to explain that. Let's go back. Let's take a step back to your research for your master's. What are these psychological issues? What are the issues that you spoke of?
And before you, let me just add to that, so I don't forget my question. Is this different for the elderly? And if so, why?
Actually, no. These are the underlying variables for any life change or transition. This is divorce, marriage, career change, if you relocate to another city, promotions that, you know, change your position. The underlying theory that we're working with here is social role theory and identity.
I want you to know, do you realize how well I've connected last week's shows to this week's show? I just wanted to bring that to your attention, Brad. That I'm out thinking about this stuff, and everyone's smiling because they know I just fell into
you're
it.
You're a genius.
I'm sorry, Robin. Go right ahead.
But what he's referring to, and I guess you listened to the show last week, but the definition of grief being
exactly
change,
exactly
what you just said. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so grief has got a role in this, I guess.
It does. I want to go forward and backwards, but I'm going to try to stay and go in order here. Because they were going into an assisted living, nobody knew them. They didn't know anyone there. That's scary. Mm-hmm. That is scary. And it also opened the door for this bizarre behavior. Because if no one knows who you are, what difference does it make? Mm-hmm. And so what I did, one portion, the main portion, because I wanted to eliminate this stress, I created a life histories program where I would sit and talk with the elderly person before they moved in. And I wrote up a very wonderful one-page life history of who they were. I was really seeking their identity. So I wrote it up. And came back to them and read it, and they usually were very proud, and their children say, well, I didn't know that, Mom, because I was able to extract, you know, the things that were primary to them. And then they would sign a release form, and they knew everyone in that building was going to read this before they arrived. Everyone was going to know who that person was. And guess what? When they came in, I told you I eliminated it 100%. They came in, And there might, you know, they might have a little bit of emotional leakage, you know, with their eyes, but they're smiling. Their back is erect because their presentation of self is exactly
I wrote. I can see how that intro, factual intro of the resident, lessens the inhibition of the current residents. Okay, because now they have something to talk to this new person about. That makes sense to me, but I don't know if I can get my hands around with about how it helps the individual coming in. Unless, well, I'll let you speak to that.
Well, it's simply a continuity, a role. It sounds so simple, but it absolutely works. I was able to quantitatively reduce the amount of time it took to adjust to the change moving in. Before, it was taking 6-8 weeks for someone to adjust. I got it down to 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks. And the other residents helped. In fact, I ended up I had a welcome committee instead of them hiding behind doors.
I mean, you had a team working together versus, as you just said, individuals hiding.
And also management and staff received a copy. And so they now were seeing this person as having such this wonderful life. And instead of just, oh, I've got another task coming in. So it helped them to bond faster. Another part of the program, of course, was writing a life, not a life history, but a little bit of a history about the caregiver so that the resident, the new resident, would feel comfortable with them. The program was comprehensive. I mean, it just, everything, but it worked. It was wonderful. And long story short, it simply works. I moved on from there to pursue my PhD, and I'm very happy to say I'm within a year.
Good.
But neuroscience has come a long, long way, and this is exciting to me. What I didn't know back then was that our frontal cortex picks up threats or punishment before our conscious mind. And what was happening with the residents, new residents coming in, their frontal cortex was just, poof, sending out cortisol like crazy because it picked up a threat. And so, of course, they were scared. Their flight or fight mechanism was in.
And the threat is the unknown. Is that right?
It is the unknown. So they were scared. They had the cortisol and adrenaline going flowing, and it was out of their control. It was just out of their control. And I've learned that through the PhD program, and now I'm addressing another situation that I found in a phenomenon that was interesting, and that's workplace bullying. And it's the frontal cortex. It's like, I'm just so amazed. I can't wait. My research is going to be on the underlying psychological, sociological, and neurological variables.
Good, good. Okay, let's bridge this. And when I was speaking with you earlier, don't recall exactly when, but you indicated that you were going to wait to open up Life Transition Expert. You were going to wait till after you finished your doctorate, but it didn't happen that way. So tell us about that, and then tell us what it is that Life Transition Expert is all about.
Okay. Well, actually, I started Life Transition Experts, LTE, in 1999. And that's because I was able to extrapolate from my thesis, master's thesis, and work with other populations. And that's when I found that, oh, my goodness, the underlying variables are the same. I was able to help people who were going through divorce. And it just spread into other areas, and it just works, and it's short term. What I offer as a transition coach is really education and training. And once the person learns the techniques and strategies, boom, done.
So you can apply the theoretical, the theory to all aspects or all transitional life transitional issues, not simply moving or whatnot. That's what I'm hearing.
Exactly. In fact, it's I've coined it the LTE approach to transitions because I'm using the same variables.
Right.
I'm looking at social role theory. I'm looking at symbolic interactionism. The role of familiarity in our life is incredible. And then belief systems, certainly.
That's good. Tell us, if you can, give us a example, a story. We're great about stories. And so if you can, give us an example or a story about a particular individual that you worked with and the outcomes.
All right. Besides having worked with the families of the elderly who are relocating into assisted living, I worked with a lady who had just gotten married and was having a difficult time with that transition. Mm-hmm. And I only met with her four times, and I saw her, it's been 2 years, and I just saw her a few weeks ago, and she just gave me the biggest hug, and she said, you know, that was so helpful. I want to come back and just tell you everything that I've done and how I've applied all the information you gave me. Mm-hmm. But it was a release for her.
How describe for our listening audience how that process begins and just at a high level, the steps that you might go through.
All right. When I have coaching clients, I first sit back and listen to everything they're saying, because I'm listening for those underlying variables. And once I've heard the story, I can ask some questions, and then we'll start a little bit on the education process. Mm-hmm. And usually that only takes 3-4 visits.
Mm-hmm. And then you're able to kind of start addressing the specific fears that they have that they don't want to address.
Well, I address continuity of role in this particular case. She was single for so long, and now she's married, and she was having trouble with that role. That was
how unusual.
So we had to explore and look where there is continuity, and that settled her and took away some of the unknown and the fears. And then I was addressing her belief system. What does it mean to you? What does it mean to you to be mm-hmm. married? And so we talked about the belief systems, and I could interject and add more positive things.
So In talking with you here and in looking at what you gave us before the show, it looks like you've kind of been in and out of assisted living communities. Are you still working at an assisted living community, or are you doing life transitions full time now?
I decided in January to develop LTE full time because I have enough to offer, enough services to offer. And as you can tell, I'm very passionate about it. I like helping people and seeing that light bulb effect go off in their head as, you know, I'm giving them little strategies to make it through this big life transition, which invariably helps them through every transition.
And are most of your meetings face-to-face, or do you do phone counseling, or do you, you know, I see that you're probably going to get into the webinar series here in a minute.
Well, when I coach, I like to be face-to-face because I pick up more on the body language.
Right.
If I say something to someone and they sort of sit back, cross their arms, or the face changes, or they answer me and they start talking in the back of their throat, I've hit something.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to explore that.
I hate people like you.
I absolutely agree with you, though. And, you know, before I bought Griswold Home Care, I did some executive coaching, and it was the same thing. You know, I know a lot of coaches try to coach over the phone, and I think there's some value there, certainly, mm-hmm. but there's just no substitute for being able to look in their eyes and watch the way they behave and listen to their voice. I agree with you completely. Where do you mm-hmm. typically do this?
At my place. I have a lovely screened-in back porch with water features, and it's flowers, and it's just lovely, and it's all garden, flower garden, and it sort of sets the tone. And I like to have a little bit of soft music in the background, and we have a cup of tea. And
I'm wondering if you brought any wind chimes or crystals back from Sedona with you.
You know, I did not purchase any. We were so busy. But
I was just noticing here that if I had been astute, I would have guessed that you had been somewhere like that because you've got all the turquoise on. And
well, the bracelet is from Phoenix, yes. Mm-hmm.
In talking off the air and reading, you have two educational opportunities coming up.
Yes.
So tell our listening audience about that.
All right. Besides coaching individuals, and I like to coach individuals when they're going through an issue because I can help and quickly. But I have created educational programs, mm-hmm. and one of the programs coming up, I think it's on the Saturday the 28th, is Transition Tips. Now, I wrote Transition Tips initially way back in 99, but I've updated them with my new neuroscience information. And so it's just some 7 or 8 tips to help family members relocate their loved one into an assisted living community.
Did you just see the light go off? Would those be applicable to what Brad and I do, which are having caregivers come into the home to help the elderly? I mean, there's always that transition period that the caregivers and the client and the family mm-hmm. has. So my question is, could we bridge that? Could we make, and I guess I should discuss this in more detail, but do you think there would be an opportunity to bridge that with your programs?
Absolutely. In fact, I met with another owner of home care, and we talked about bridging it, how I would bridge it, and it would work wonderful. The life history is just one of the best things that you can do.
Great. Okay, I'm sorry, off track. Go back now to your second educational opportunity.
Okay. Well, one of the transition tips that I talk about is, whoops, there went something.
It's all right. It's Kevin's equipment. We don't care.
Oh. if there's, any bit of dementia, and sometimes even if there's not, you want to take a picture as a family member. Take a picture of the bedroom, the current setup of the bedroom, and you want to set that up in the assisted living room exactly the same. And the reason is,
familiarity.
The older familiarity, and when we get up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, we don't put our glasses on, we just automatically go. And the first 30 days is the highest risk for fall.
And it is extremely difficult for those people with memory disorders to change. And it's one of the major mm-hmm. life changes, as you described.
That's interesting because it didn't really occur to me. I saw that in your notes here, the 30-day window. And it didn't really occur to me why, but I mean, that makes all the sense in the world. If you've lived in the same house for 40 years, you've got a pattern for when you get up in the middle of the night and you walk to the bathroom, and now if suddenly it's different, then you trip over something.
And just for, as you said, safety and familiarity, even if you're in your home and you stumble, you know where things are, you know where to grab, you know where to, kind mm-hmm. of in a strange area, you're blind, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, let me bring in the neurological aspects, too. When you're under stress and your brain is pumping out the cortisol and adrenaline, that's moving all your blood flow to your feet and your legs. All right, that is not in your stomach. Your digestion doesn't work anymore, and it opens the door. If you stay stressed, it opens the door for sickness as well.
Hmm.
So we've got to reduce the stress as quickly as possible.
Well, and it, again, it makes sense. We know that stress, there's an old West Virginia accent. I don't know where that came from. We know that stress is a major contributor to many overlaying health issues, be it diabetes, be it heart disease. We know that.
Blood pressure goes up. Yeah. Cholesterol goes up. I mean, all these things happen. So we've got to not have chronic stress.
Well, good luck. Good luck with that, reducing that. Yeah, I've had a physician not very long ago look at me and said, "Are you under stress?" And I honestly looked at him and I called him a name. I said, "Aren't you? Who's not?"
Okay, we can talk later.
Okay, now there was a another. Let's see if I got this right. A roundtable discussion that you have planned. Is that right?
Yes. I will, for the follow-up, for the transition tips.
Oh, okay.
I'll have the roundtable. We'll do it at another time, give people an opportunity to soak in the information, perhaps start working with some of the tips. Another tip is to go ahead and start taking pictures in the house. Hmm. And create an album so that album can accompany the new resident.
You know, as I think about, as you're talking, transitions from the home to a facility, you typically see families go out, and obviously they have to pare furniture down. They can't bring everything. Mm-hmm. And it would seem in my mind the most important, or probably the most important thing to try to keep as consistent as possible would be the two areas, the bedroom and the family room.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else can probably go by the wayside, but I would believe that those would be the most important.
One of the things that really has helped is this photo album.
Yeah.
Take a picture of, you know, standing by the china cabinet and maybe holding the china up, taking pictures of your loved one throughout the house, and let the photos tell a story. And then in the album, leave a place of where the elderly person is empowered to go ahead and to give away cherished belongings that they can't fit into their new, you know, as they're sizing down. And that way they'll always know, oh, I gave this to my niece. I gave the china to my niece. She was getting married. And it's just a way of documenting the family history.
Let's talk about an actual situation. Let's role play here. I have a mother that's in her, it doesn't matter, mid-80s or whatnot, and we just cannot keep her in the home. We know this is going to be stressful. Where should I begin, or what would you suggest that we do in preparation of addressing that? Do we start doing this before we announce, or the decision is made that we're going to relocate? Do we do it in conjunction? How does all that work?
Ideally, you would be able to introduce the idea several months before you're actually going to make that transition.
And usually in our case, that doesn't happen, does it? It's a 5-day boom.
I know it. They're in rehab and they can't go home. Mm-hmm. So in that case, you want to empower that person as much as possible. And say, for instance, you've already done your research. You found three wonderful communities that's going to be convenient, and you can take the brochures. You can take photos of your visit there, and present it.
What about taking my mother on campus visits?
Oh, yes, absolutely, if you're able to do that. But if they're in a rehab, moving around's kind of difficult, and you may have to do that. One thing I didn't talk about, and this is what I'm very excited about, and one of the reasons why I decided to go ahead and start get LTE more active right now, is that when I created this comprehensive program back in 2000, I presented it at the National Assisted Living Federation of America. I think it was in Houston or Dallas at the time. And I also presented at several state conventions. And the problem with my program was it required an additional manager to handle all of the relocation issues. And they
required the facility.
The facility, yeah, to have another one. So most of them accepted and implemented the Life Histories program because that was the most critical. What's happened in 14 years is that we have all kinds of relocation specialists now. Mm-hmm. They handle
whole new industry.
Various aspects of it. And so that's why I'm so excited, because I can offer accreditation for them, a certificate program, so that they would know all the things I've learned and implement it.
You know, Brad, we've talked many, many times about planning, you know, for these events, and it just drives that home. None of us want to, because we know it's going to be a difficult situation, and so we delay the inevitable, and therefore, when the decision has to be made, we've got no time to work through the transitions, which then makes the transition even worse. So, you know, it's the old, I mean, you got medicine. You're going to swallow the bitter pill up front and get it over with and make the transition easy, or you're just going to stand in front of the firing squad and wait for it all to hit you at one time. And then,
if you can talk about it early, plant the seeds.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the, you know, the photo album helps them go ahead and start, you know, thinking, planning it, that's going to have to size down at some point. What do you want to do with this? What do you want to do with that?
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our time has slipped away. It always happens this way.
Yeah.
But as we wrap this up, what piece of advice might you have for families that have a loved one that is approaching a transition?
All right, I've got it, and very succinctly. Seek knowledge about whatever the specialized care might be, and become your loved one's advocate.
And that's, you know, that's exactly what we were just talking about. You've got to, you're going to face it. You might as well make the transition easy rather than difficult. And again, I mean, I'm not trying to condemn anyone, because I'm probably the world's worst. Brad knows this, and getting out of my comfort zone, but yeah, that's what.
Well,
you
as long
have to
as
do.
It doesn't have to do with technology, you're fine.
That's the gospel right there. I can tell you that.
You walk into Sam's house, no running water, no electricity, and he's just happy.
Why do you always have to go too far? Yeah, you always do. Okay, enough of this. Robin, we thank you. Good information. It really, and this is information that Brad and I certainly find useful, and I see how we can bridge this over to current clients, and certainly anyone that's in has an elder individual that they love, they're going to have to face these at this situation at one time or another.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being our guest.
Thank you for having me.
I want to invite you back if as you progress, if you see that there's other information that might be meaningful to our listening audience, we would love to have you back.
All right.
Tell the listeners, if you will, how they can contact you.
My telephone number is 404-422-7234. And you can check out my website at lifetransitionexperts.com. And my calendar of events for June is one of the tabs. And if you're interested in the transition tips, you'll be able to sign up for it. It's very, very easy. We do it by webinar. It's on the internet. And you don't have to have special anything for it. Just telephone and your computer.
Very good.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. We want to invite and remind our listening audience that they can always listen to a rebroadcast of today's show at ugeriaradio.com. And as we always do, we want to close and say that if the youth of this nation is its greatest natural resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of this nation is its greatest national treasure. Thank you, and God bless.
Ugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.